The Weekly Long Box is brought to you this week by Handy Holder. Do you have a tablet device? What if you were to accidentally drop it on the floor and break it? With Handy Holder, you would never have to worry about that again. Visit hand, the letter E, holder.com to learn more about the world's best universal tablet holder.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 38 of the Weekly Long Box. I'm Todd. As always, Leonard's with me. How you doing this week, Leonard?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm ready for talking about comic stuff and all things therein. Episode 38, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. It's as though his numbers are sequentially getting larger as we continue to do the show.
And I think the shows are getting better with the bigger numbers. I think we're trying harder with bigger numbers.
Yes. A couple weeks ago, I noticed somebody on Twitter had mentioned, like, they went back and they listened to all of the episodes in, like, one clip.
Ooh. I know we were rough in the beginning.
No, he's still listening. You know, he still follows us along on the Twitter. How was your weekend, by the way?
Good. Let's see. I sat around, read some Lucifer trades from Davey, tried to watch some Breaking Bad, bought a Fantastic Four number 5.
Fantastic Four number 5. You just mentioned that in there and in passing?
Yeah, yeah.
Where'd you pick that one up at?
Me and Dave were talking, and he has an account on Heritage Auctions, which I do not. And he was telling me that he saw a good, you know, priced one that they have the history of what they go for and stuff. Like, they'll have any book, and you can see what they went for last year, the last time they were up, whatever. And he saw that on Heritage they were going for a pretty good price. And he's like, do you want me to talk to you and we'll work something out? I'll do it because I have to sign up. And I said, yeah. And he ended up getting it for me. And from the pictures that we saw and the grade, it looks like I got a really good deal on the grade and the price. Like, for the price it was, I think, like, I could have paid like a quarter more and I would have got the exact right price for the grade.
Well, that's pretty cool. Is that a significant issue other than just being a really, really early issue of Fantastic Four?
First appearance of Dr. Doom.
Oh, man. You're in a... You must be in some sort of miraculous fugue state then, based on that.
Yes, I was, before the show, you could attest, I was a little disheveled. It was because of that. It was because of, you know, Dr. Doom is whisking his way in the mail to me. We don't know when, you know what I mean? But they pack stuff really good. He's bought stuff from them before, and I want to thank him once again for, you know, looking out for me and wheeling and dealing. So hopefully it'll be in the next, like, week sometime. I don't know when.
You know, and actually that does lead us into some of our news stuff. What do we got going on in the news this week?
Yes, we have more dribs and drabs of the Marvel creators and what books they're going to be on. But, you know, we talk about that all the time and we love that. But today is going to be a ton of movie news. Who's writing what? What's going on? Just tons and tons of movie news.
Well, I know we're waiting on the speculation of the new books coming out in November, the new creative teams that we're going to see in November. But there's one particular announcement that I want to talk about from this past week, and that was the announcement that was made for the new creative team on Deadpool.
Oh, okay. There was some news about the creative team on Deadpool?
There was some internet hubbub going around about that.
Ooh, can't wait to talk about that. And we're also going to talk about what we read last week. There was a lot of crossover between Leonard and me and a couple of new books that, you know, just came out. So looking forward to that. And we're also...
There's actually one in particular on the list. Well, actually, two books in particular. One, I had mentioned last week, Hawkeye number 1,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, I was very trepidatious about reading. But then there's another book that I'm glad you emailed me about that you wanted to put on the list because it's a book. We'll get into it when we talk about it, but I'm glad you put it on the list.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Because that's what it is. I'm a futurist. Like I always said, I'm like Tony Stark. And we're going to talk about what we're looking forward to this week. There's lots of good books. And the Twitter question of the week, which is, what's your favorite costume? And as we always say, you know, we get a lot of response. Once again, this is the most response we've had for any Twitter question. I think the ball's really rolling, and people seem to love my Twitter questions a little bit more. But not as good as your wife's Twitter questions.
She always had the best, and believe me, as I mentioned, it's not from a lack of her trying to think of ones, but yeah, this was a good one, and we say it every week for the last couple of weeks. It's like, oh, this is the most, this is the most. It really is. Every week, week in and week out, every question that we have, there's a lot more contributions that you guys are giving back to us. And actually, we were delayed a little bit in starting the show, pulling back the curtain as we are wont to do. I do also want to give a special shout out to completely unaffiliated with us. It's _ScoopFire on Twitter. They have been really, really pushing our stuff hard on Twitter.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you for that.
Yes. So they have a website that's _ScoopFire.com. That's their Twitter, and they have been really pushing our Twitter questions and really pushing a lot of our stuff on Twitter. And I don't want to be foolish and like find out that they're like a shell corporation that's been built in to our show without us even realizing it in an inception sort of way.
Layer upon layer is our show. That's the way I always described it.
So where would you like to start with the news, sir?
Let's talk about the little bit of creator news that we know of.
Yes. So as mentioned, you know, we've been seeing a lot of the announcements coming out. Last week was the teasers of who was going to be working on what books. This week has been like the official announcements with the first cover art shots and little interviews with the creative teams. I'm sure by the end of this week, we'll have the Fraction entrance interview for Fantastic Four. We'll have the Rick Remender, if he's taken over the Captain America or the Winter Soldier book, which will lean me on where we're going with that book as well. But the one announcement that was made was that taking over on Deadpool was a very interesting creative team. It was the art team. Tony Moore is on art. It didn't specify if he was going to be doing covers or otherwise. I would assume if they can get him on interiors, that's pretty fly. But the writers of the book are Brian Posehn and Jerry Duggan. Now, Brian Posehn I know very well. He is – you would know him to see him.
I actually think I know who he is. Is he the guy that they that was with the band Banjo and Sullivan in – not in House of a Thousand Corpses. What was the other one?
Devil's Rejects.
Devil's Rejects. He was in that. He's like a big guy with like balding, scruffy looking hair and glasses.
Yes,
I know.
Yes,
David Posehn.
He was in the TV show Just Shoot Me.
Yes.
He's very like well known as like a nerd comedian, if you will, and he's really funny. He was on Mr. Show, Bob and David from HBO. He was on the Sarah Silverman Show, and that was still on Comedy Central. You know, he's really big into heavy metal. He's really big into like comic books and stuff. And he's a stand-up guy as well. And Jerry Duggan is a very famous writer. That's like his writing partner. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be doing Deadpool, allegedly. And, you know, people are speculating on how these books are going to go. And, one man who did a little bit more than speculating. And, that would be, Todd's favorite writer-artist in all of comicdom. I'd say that with a sniff. Rob Liefeld had tweeted essentially saying that it was D-list talent that was taking over Deadpool. And a lot of people jumped on, whether it be Axel Alonso, whether it be Rick Remender, whether it be Dave Johnson. Rob came back and his response was, "The truth hurts. Did I miss the Brubaker Deadpool arc? The Mark Millar one? The Jeff Loeb one? Get over yourselves. The flip of my statement is that Marvel doesn't feature their prized talent on Deadpool, and the character does well. Mostly newbies, hence D-list." Now, he did go and make a retraction in regards to this, and I understand what he means in regards to D-list. However, just the fact that he's commenting on it, to me, sounds like a little bit of sour grapes on his part.
Sour grapes, how? Because he's not doing the books, or he wants bigger talent on it so he can get more money for his, you know, because he created the character, or what?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what
now, right. Now, granted, it was back before they were cutting their teeth on things like Joe Kelly got his start on these books, and Ed McGuinness and Gail Simone, but they've had some really good creators lately, like David Laffam, Kyle Baker, people like that have done the book recently, as has Rick Remender used Deadpool. I don't know what Rob's agenda on this one was. I don't think anyone knows what Rob's agenda is in most instances, but this one confounds me.
I don't understand it either. Are you sitting down? Because
I
kind of understand what he's saying. Like, but you don't say it to me. I don't know if I'm coming off right. Yeah, they never put, you know, like Jeff Johns on Deadpool, or they never put Mark Millar or Ed Brubaker, but they're never gonna. If they don't want to write that book, like, you tell me if Ed Brubaker wanted to write Deadpool tomorrow, they wouldn't give him a miniseries?
I think, right, and that's the thing. You know, we joke about all the time. Actually, it's been joked about in the comic industry that everyone has, like, a pitch for blank. And usually that pitch is, like, Doctor Strange or somebody, or, like, the New Gods. Like, everybody's got that pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think a lot of creators that are writing books now grew up on Deadpool. So I don't think a lot of creators have that Deadpool pitch in their back pocket.
And I'm with you. They don't have that Deadpool pitch. And it's kind of a tougher character. Like, I always equated Deadpool to me. Whenever I read it, I've laughed. I'm going to say that. But it's not a book that I can get monthly. It was like, you know, somebody writing Lobo for DC back in the day. They're kind of like, it seems like there's only so much you can really do. Like, the fans want what they want from Deadpool. You're not going to, you know, make it bigger, you know, whatever. I don't know how to explain it. Like you said, the pitch, I don't know what it would be, because it just seems like it's you know, it's just fun. You know, he kills people, does wacky stuff over and over again. And I don't know, like, they'd probably rather do Cap or Spider-Man or FF or any of the big books, you know?
Well, we've talked about that before. I'm sure there is a creator out there. Like, every character is somebody's favorite character. It doesn't matter who you are. You know, someone is someone's favorite character. And as I mentioned, we've said before, there's that algorithm of X character plus X creative team needs to equal Y sales.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe those top tier creators, what their paycheck is, doesn't meet what the average of a Deadpool sales book is, even what their name is, you know, even with their name attached. You know, maybe the Marvel bean counters have crunched the numbers and just said, it is not financially feasible for us to put Bendis, let's just say, on Deadpool. Now, granted, they did do Bendis on Moon Knight, and it failed and failed miserably. And I'm sure that's probably why a lot of big-name creators aren't going to go for the D-list characters. I look at it more as D-list characters. You know, Deadpool is getting his own video game. Rob himself even worked on Deadpool within the last 2 years, doing covers and interiors.
That's a D-lister. So,
Again, he's including himself in the D-list, I guess, with that. But I think it just – maybe he misspoke.
Well, I mean, I know you've always said this. I remember back when Jason Aaron was doing Wolverine and what was he doing? Punisher Max at the same time?
Punisher Max, yes.
And they were like, you know which one you're putting off on the side, right? Remember when he couldn't do them both at the same time, I guess, or he was getting backed up in his backlog. And I think you were even telling me the story. It was, you know, all right, like, let's put the one that's – that. Not going to get the paycheck on the side. We're going to put Wolverine out. And that's the way it is. They want their big creators on the big books, and that's where the money's at.
Yep, indeed. And, you know, it's just unfortunate for Rob to kind of, like, be taking these pot shots at guys. And, like, who knows? Brian Pushane and Jerry Duggan may have the greatest Deadpool story in the world. They don't. That was written by Joe Kelly back in the late 90s. Gail Simone's Deadpool was pretty good as well, but I still hang my hat on that Joe Kelly run, that was, you know, about 36 issues, went for about 3 years, give or take, is not just some of the best Deadpool, the best that Deadpool's ever been, some of the best comics, and possibly even, you know, the reason why everyone today who loves Deadpool, like, they may not know it, but that's the reason why, it's that run.
Like I said, I was never a huge Deadpool fan, so I don't know. But when I read it, I enjoyed it. And you know what? It's funny because you're talking about Pusain doing the Deadpool book. And I'm like, that would almost be something I'd give a try more than a regular comic creator. It, as a fan, a person who's never really read it, I'm like, a stand-up comedian? I don't know if it'll work, but the whole curiosity factor has me at least interested.
Yeah, I would give Deadpool another whirl. There was a time where I was buying Deadpool regardless, and it got to a point where I would weigh the issues of Deadpool that I was reading on a book that came out 20 years ago, the Joe Kelly run.
Mm-hmm.
And I would read it, and I'm like, not as good as that Joe Kelly run. Like, I can pick the worst issue out of that Joe Kelly run, and it was still better than, like, Deadpool's been in the last 5 years.
And at one point, wasn't there, like, 5 Deadpool titles coming out a month?
There was.
And that's ridiculous. That's too much.
Right. And they were all with, you know, these D-list creators, as Rob likes to say. You know, your Rob Liefelds, your David Lathams, and Kyle Bakers, and people like that. And, you know, that's that D-list creative teams.
Yeah, I'm not even going to get into some of that. On who's a D-lister and who's not. Because I don't think all those, even at the time, all those names were D-listers.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, you know, Rob's opinions, and like I said, I still respect him for speaking his mind and putting his face out there and kind of owning up to his own words. But, you know, sometimes your comments can hurt the industry than help the industry.
And I'm becoming numb to his comments, so it doesn't even have me worked up. Old Todd would be raging right now, but it's like, it's just Rob being Rob.
So, what movie news would you like to talk about next? Because there is a bucket full.
There is a bucket full. I'm going to go with the big news and the Avengers to me.
Yes, Avengers. It was just announced today during the Disney Investors Conference call that not only is Disney signed Joss Whedon on to write and direct the next Avengers movie, that would be fine in and of itself. However, they also have him on to develop the TV series that we had talked about last week that is going to be set in the same universe that's going to be on ABC. Joss Whedon got his start in TV, whether it be your Buffy the Vampire Slayers or Firefly. He has gone on to some, a modicum of success in the movie industry. You know, the number one movie of the summer, number three movie of all time. So, you know, to have him helping out and kind of guiding the hand of that TV show is about as smart as a move as you can make.
I totally agree. I mean, he made you a gazillion dollars with, you know, a movie. Granted, other people laid the groundwork. You know, you had some big talent on there. You didn't have Robert Downey Jr., but the Vision, you know, that's his thing. Like you said, he's done some good episodic TV to me anyway. That's the greatest choice. And it keeps him happy and keeps him around. You don't want to lose him. And that's the best decision they can make.
We, and, you know, we've talked before about how he was at DC getting ready to do the Wonder Woman movie and talks about how horrible of a experience it was.
That's going to have the talent lining up to do all the DC movies when Josh says that.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was pretty big news for them to mention that at the investors meeting. Obviously, they had to acknowledge this elephant in the room, if you will, the horrible comic book company that they bought, you know, is their number one movie, number three of all time, as mentioned. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, that makes me that much more happy about Avengers 2, because, you know, it could be one of those things where they're like, the first one was successful. If we just put out a second one, regardless of who makes it, it'll be just fine. Anybody have Joel Schumacher's phone number?
Yeah, let's get him on the phone. I'd love to see some of the interesting neon stuff they could do with Iron Man's armor on that, make it look more Tron. Like, we own Tron, they'll be like, right, let's mix the two.
Oh, goodness. So, yeah, so that is some good news. I would like to talk about what's been going on over at Fox regarding their properties that they have.
I think that's an interesting thing that's definitely going on.
Yes, and this is all from Variety, the industry trade thing. Essentially what it comes down to is that Fox is going to lose the license on Daredevil unless they have a movie in production in the next 2 months. They've been working with the guy who directed The Gray and was involved with the A-Team movie that was out last year to make a Daredevil movie. But Fox doesn't want the type of movie that he's putting together. So they're kind of at an impasse. And they were getting ready to just let the rights revert back to Marvel. Well, according to the article in Variety that just came out the other day, Marvel essentially said, even though Fox is denying it, Marvel said, we'll give you guys an extension on Daredevil. Take all the time you need. But if we could dip our toe into that Fantastic Four licensee, and if we could borrow Galactus and Silver Surfer, you know, we'll let you guys have your time on Daredevil and knock yourselves out. But then Fox, you know, wants more so to do a Fantastic Four movie than a Daredevil movie. I think it would be a smart move for Fox to let them use Galactus, at the very least Galactus, in one of the upcoming movies. I'm sure possibly Guardians of the Galaxy, or one would think, you know, Avengers 2, perhaps, and if somehow they can tangentially link their upcoming Fantastic Four reboot to the mega juggernaut that is what Marvel is doing with their movies, they'd be silly not to.
You know what? I actually never thought of it that way. And I don't say this much about you. That was that was really good. That's smart. I would have just been like, ah, trade them. I think you're going to have better luck doing a grounded, Daredevil, Frank Miller-esque story than, get working Galactus in. Because, the Avengers universe and you're going to have Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, Silver Surfer and Galactus are just going to fit right in there as far as I'm concerned. But tying it in and doing an FF movie... what more PR do you need than a billion-dollar movie? I think that's the way they should go. I think they should call you as a consultant.
Well, again, I'm just saying that would be a smart thing to do. Fox definitely should be making some sort of deals to kind of hitch their wagon to what Marvel Studios through Disney is doing with their movies. Because right now, their movies are just kind of out in the ether. Like, Spider-Man exists as a movie, but Marvel's like, I'm sure they're thinking, make your cute little Spider-Man movies. They're going to eventually fail, and eventually the rights are going to revert back to us. Might be 2 months from now, like Daredevil. Might be 2 years from now. We're patient. We got enough characters here that you don't have. You've got your five or six. We've got the rest.
See, I'm a slightly different mind on that. I think as long as they don't do Batman and Robin via Spider-Man, that Spider-Man's going to make money. Just think, it's only, they only did three movies, and they rebooted again, and they're making money. There's just something about Spider-Man. If you wanted to throw, maybe FF, I could see FF not having the legs that Spider-Man has, but I don't know. I just think, that Disney's like, why did you give Spider-Man away so many years ago? They're going to have that forever. But FF, I could see falling back, and especially Daredevil. There's no way you're going to make as many Daredevil movies and make money off of that the way some of the Marvel, big Marvel movies like Spider-Man or Avengers or Iron Man. Just not as well known.
You know what? I'm just throwing out ideas here. I'm no Hollywood movie mogul. If I'm Fox, I'd be like, listen, we'll give you back Fantastic Four, lock, stock, and barrel. You could have it.
Mm-hmm.
We still got Spider-Man. We still got
Daredevil.
Give us a bunch of the other street-level characters. Give us Iron Fist and Power Man. Give us the Punisher. Give us Moon Knight. And let Fox do, the street-level stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then let Marvel handle the big sort of stuff.
I agree.
Because there's money to be made in having their own little universe of stuff. And, yes, do Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four mix together? Yes. Does Daredevil and the Fantastic Four mix together? Yes. Everybody in the Marvel universe mixes together. But Marvel has their machine working so fluidly now. Fox needs to do something.
I agree. And I think, like you said, the lower level characters. But there's no way Marvel's like, we got all of the money. We don't have to. We're just going to wait. Like you said, if they trip up, Daredevil's coming back. I think FF is going to go back regardless of whether it goes back now or later. Maybe you can parlay into getting Galactus. The only one that I think is going to be the tough one is Spider-Man. But everything else, eventually, and they're like, then when we have it, because they can wait. They don't care. They have their big movies that they're working on, Iron Man. Now we have Guardians of the Galaxy, you have Cap, Thor. That's our universe. We're patient. We're Disney. We'll be okay. We're not going to go under because we don't have Spider-Man or FF. But like you said, they'll eventually come back.
Now, and again, correct me if I'm wrong. Who has the X-Men stuff? Is it Fox as well?
I think so. I think Fox has the X-Men stuff. I don't remember.
Right, because I know they just, filming has begun on the Wolverine movie, and they did announce that the sequel to X-Men First Class is going to be Days of Future Past referenced and based, which is pretty awesome.
I think so too, and I want to see like how far they're going to go with it, because they most of these movies they like to keep like a grounded. I know this sounds weird in a comic book movie, just grounded in a little level of believability. But I wonder if they're going to work time travel in, because I honestly thought when they were going to do an Avengers movie that it was going to be kind of tough to work aliens in, because they kind of had this like believability. I know that's it sounds weird, like Iron Man and Cap, and I thought Thor was also going to be the hardest. So to swerve in aliens, but like to swerve in time travel in X-Men, but I'm like, you know what? Done right, I wouldn't care. It'll work.
Right. So yeah, I'm excited for the X-Men movies. Bryan Singer's back involved, or Bryan Singer still involved with the sequel to X-Men First Class. Outside of a little tiny bit at the end, I really, really liked X-Men First Class. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. I really enjoyed it, and I especially loved the snazzy Magneto costume at the end. What?
I love that horn on the front of his helmet there. That really tied the whole outfit together.
Made it look good. The horn is like that Black Bolt. I think they should have a group of people who have all little horns on their helmets.
Vomitous.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
So the one last thing that I do want to mention here in wrapping up the news, and this does kind of tie into Todd's big announcement that he made, not in as fun as a way, but in a way nonetheless. Current writer of many different things, past and present. I think he was doing Conan as most recently. Carl Kessel, the man who got me into Daredevil. It was his Daredevil stuff that really hooked me on the character, and possibly, you know, it holds up there with those Brubaker runs, the Bendis runs, the current Mark Waid runs. He and his wife adopted a baby, and the baby, had to go through weeks of detoxification, and in order to pay for the medical bills, just like Mark Waid did, similarly through Blast Off Comics, he is selling his entire Silver Age Marvel collection through there to assist in paying the bills. So it's a very good cause for a very good writer, a guy who's written tons and tons of stuff. In addition to Daredevil, he wrote Final Night back in the 90s. He wrote Superboy, Harley Quinn, on and on and on, and the stuff that he's written. And it's all great stuff that he's written. And if you look at what he has for sale, he's got tons and tons of stuff. Lots of Avengers, lots of Amazing Spider-Man, lots of Daredevil. And things are at reasonable prices. You know, nothing's like too crazy, you know, pricing-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And as Todd had mentioned before, that he has his Fantastic Four number 5, first appearance of Doctor Doom. One of the books that he has up for sale is Avengers number 8.
What is Avengers number 8?
Oh, how dare you. Avengers number 8 is the first appearance of Kang the Conqueror.
Ah, Kang the Conqueror. Dave's favorite supervillain after Toyman.
I was going to say, don't decry the name of Toyman and Dave in the same sentence, because I know that's his true favorite.
Yes, it is.
But there's tons and tons of other stuff up there. There's like tons of like, you know, Journey into Mystery issues. There's tons of Amazing Spider-Man stuff, as I mentioned. Like, there's Milestone stuff. They have the Amazing Spider-Man cover, the infamous cover with Norman flying through the skies with Spidey all tied up.
Yeah, with the suit underneath the shirt ripped and everything. Really cool cover.
Right, right. And like I said, the Avengers issue, the Avengers number 8 issue is, you know, relatively nicely priced. I got, you know, it's $150, and I'm thinking about it. I'm really thinking about it, because it's the first appearance of Kang. Kang's my favorite.
Wouldn't that be awesome if we got, like, the greatest villain of all time and, like, the 81st greatest villain of all time, Kang, in the same week? You should pull the trigger on that.
How dare you?
What?
I can think of dozens and dozens of villains that Kang is better than.
Oh, you know what? Make a list and send it to me, because I don't think you can.
How dare you? So, yeah, definitely check it out. Definitely read the story. And we'll put the story in the show notes. So you could check it out if you did not hear about it, as I did a pretty horrible job of explaining it. So where would you like to start with the comics we read from last week, my good man?
Would you like to start with Thief of Thieves number 7?
Yes, you can start with Thief of Thieves number 7. I'm glad you put this book on the list.
In a good way or a bad way?
Well, in this way. Convince me to keep reading this book.
Oh, really?
Yes. I couldn't really get into issue 7. I don't know why. I don't know if it was the pacing. I can't put my finger on it. But after I was done reading it, I'm like, this is getting the red check mark next to it on the list. You know, that it's going to be a tentative possible cut.
Really?
Yes.
You're crazy.
Okay.
I loved it. I thought, I know this is the old cliche, and I hate when it's used a lot, but it's one of those, everything that you thought was going on in this book is wrong, and I really love the sting that the main character is pulling and seeing things from different views. I'm a big fan of the movie The Sting. I don't know if you ever saw it. And I just love this kind of stuff of, like, you know, criminals doing things, and you think it's going to run one way, and it doesn't. I mean, I don't know how to put it into words exactly, but this was really fun, and I want to see where this book is going to go, because a lot of the characters, like, I thought the cop was what he did to the girl cop, and what's going to happen to her. I'm like, oh, okay, I thought she'd be, you know, chasing him for this and that, but I don't know what's going to happen to her career now. I thought that they were going to lay down a lot of enemies with the crew that was doing the job, and he kind of, you know, worked over, and then, like, what happened to him? They're like, oh, if you saw it from this point of view, which I thought was kind of cool. Maybe you thought was kind of cheesy. I don't know. It just, all about it, I really love this book.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just going to have to, like, sit down and read the 7 issues back to back to back. But I base most of my cons on The Sting Part 2, since nobody saw it.
Isn't that what's your name, Abe, this week? yeah, I know what you mean. The Sting 2 was better, because that's always going to get somebody. But I don't know. I love the art on the book and all the characters they brought in. And this one's in for the long haul for me. No red check mark. If you want to put your little red check mark down, but gladly go ahead.
Now, I will say this. There was a book that had the red check mark next to it on my list even before I read the first issue. And that, as I had mentioned on last week's episode, was Hawkeye number 1. Matt Fraction is one of the most beloved writers in all of comic books, at least on the interwebs. And I have tried many and many a things that he can get into. And my feelings on his stuff has either been meh or not like it at all. So I was coming into this book, Hawkeye number 1, as mentioned. Hawkeye's one of my favorite characters. You know, I'm not a long-time comic reader, going all the way back to his stuff from the 70s and stuff when he first debuted. But, like, the way he was written by, like, Kurt Busiek and those Avengers and Thunderbolts books in the 90s, that was some awesome stuff. The West Coast Avengers stuff from the 80s is all great stuff. So I was dreading what Carl Castle was going to do with – or Carl Castle. I have Carl Castle on the mind. I was dreading what Matt Fraction was going to do with this character. David Aja's art was going to be beautiful regardless. That wasn't a question. And I really liked this book.
I was worried that you weren't going to like this book, because I do like Matt Fraction. I think his Iron Man run has been fantastic. But I have to differ with you on the art. I'm not a big fan of the art.
Really?
Yeah. I love the story. Anytime you bring a canine into a book, I'm all for it, and I root for them. And what he did with the canine in this was horrible / you know, cool towards the end. But when he, especially when we were doing the, like, Hawkeye stuff in the front, I don't know. I just think minimalist on this, it doesn't work for me. I'd like a little more. The art doesn't ruin it for me, because to me the story was, like, really awesome, and I didn't think I would ever love a Barton comic book. I'm not a Hawkeye fan. But, you know, like I said, the story won me out over the art.
Yes, and I guess eventually we're going to get the female Hawkeye, who was in Young Avengers. She's going to be joining the book, I think, around issue 3.
Oh.
Those two are going to be paired up, and I think Fraction really gets a good handle on Clint Barton's character, and it's just kind of cool. I hope they keep this book away from the Avengers book for a while, like not having Thor and Iron Man show up on issue 4, you know, keep it at this low level, you know, keep it in, like, you know, and the first issue, and this is what I've been noticing a lot with the Marvel first issues. We saw it a couple weeks ago with Captain Marvel, and we saw it, I think, here, where the first issue is kind of almost like a complete story.
Mm-hmm.
But it sets the tone for where the book is going.
And that's perfect for an issue number 1, and I agree with you. And the thing that kind of shocked me about this is Hawkeye is almost not in the book as Hawkeye, you know?
Right.
Like, what is he in the first page in the costume?
Yes.
And then after that, it's him doing stuff undercover, which I'm fine with. And your thing about, like, you know, having the Avengers come in or Thor, I don't think so, unless, you know, when the next big crossover comes in, then this is going to be in it at some point. But, like, his Iron Man and stuff like that, that's one thing that I do have to give him, is, like, as many issues as he's been on it, other than, you know, because Iron Man's been a part of the big crossovers, they don't have, like, the guest stars in other books. They seem to kind of let him go, and I like that. And I think with the smaller book especially, they might just let him go, because we talk about how they let the mid-tier characters to lower-tier characters alone until it's crossover season.
Yeah, well, hopefully crossover season will be done for a while once the big October Marvel Now thing starts up.
Right,
maybe they'll kind of keep everyone sheltered for a little while.
Yeah, because since Avengers vs. X-Men is going on right now, I don't think we're going to jump into it at the end, so you're safe until next year. At least I hope.
We shall see. We shall see. But like I said, I like David Aja's art. I really liked it. It's colored a little bit differently than the way that it was colored the last time when he and Fraction worked together on Iron Fist. And I think, I know we disagree on the art on this one, but I would love to see David Aja, if he was to leave this book, become the rotating art, that rotating art crew that's on Daredevil. And speaking of which, Daredevil 16 came out this past week.
Yes, it did.
And we did have some other books in the list, and I know Todd's – we had spoke earlier before we started recording, and Todd's like, oh, we got to stop talking about the same books every week. But, you know, the same books are awesome. Like, we did take Animal Man and Swamp Thing off the list. Hey, the Rot World crossover started. Read both those books. It tells you which one to read first. They're both awesome.
And then we go right into a Zero issue and then back into the Rot World.
Right. But Daredevil 16 was a really good book, and we say it every time we talk about Daredevil, is that Mark Waid is doing things with Daredevil that no one has ever done before. And you would think that a character like Daredevil, with his power set, you know, he's blind, and he's got the radar sense, and all of his other senses are enhanced, that, like, there's only so many stories that you could tell with him. But it seems like each issue, Mark Waid does something new with the character that, like, me as a longtime Daredevil reader has never seen anyone do with him.
Okay. I'm the same way. I really like this issue. More towards the end, the Ant-Man or Pym stuff, I was kind of like, okay, but there's some stuff that's going on at the end with Foggy and Matt. That's what really grabbed me.
Yes, that's because the front part of the book is essentially the Avengers, specifically Iron Man, Doctor Strange, and Hank Pym trying to reactivate Matt's senses that had been dulled by whatever Doom's goons were doing to him in Latveria.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's going on, and Matt's radar senses are kicking back in, he's starting to share some memories with Hank Pym, and I wonder where that's going to lead into.
Right, right.
So I'm very interested to see where that goes. But then there was a huge revelation at the end of the book, and, you know, they pulled the trigger on something that a lot of writers have teased with Foggy and Matt. But what they set up that Matt did, or maybe didn't do, it'll be very interesting to see where the character goes from here.
Right. It's the whole storyline, what's in the desk?
Yes.
It was what's in the drawer. And I have to admit, I've talked to a few people, and they were like, you know what? I have to admit, I never thought it was going to be that. I have to say, but it was really
right,
cool.
And that's what we're talking about, is like, it could have been anything. Like, did he lie about keeping that flash drive thing?
Mm-hmm.
Is it this? Is it that? Like, and I don't think anyone would have guessed that that's what it was.
Oh, nope. I had my guess a few weeks on the last issue on the show, or two issues ago. I thought it was a gun. I honestly thought it was a gun, that he might be suicidal, but I was wrong.
Right, so Daredevil is really good. You can get them all very easily, and issue 16 is the end of a storyline, but it's also the beginning of some interesting direction to see where the characters are going to be going. So if for some reason you've been a fool and not been reading Daredevil, now's the time. I think I just had somebody, that's the book that I get the most traction from, whether it be in person when I'm doing my wrestling deal or on Twitter. That's the book that gets, you know, the most people saying, like, hey, I tried out Daredevil because of the show and I love it.
I don't get to travel as much and meet new people. I should.
We need to have a live episode at our local comic book store.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Like, we could have our pictures taken in front of, like, the wall holding a comic book.
Our favorite comics, maybe. And, right. You know, we just look good. We just look good in there.
Right, because, you know, that's why we're doing a podcast on the internet, because we're both very photogenic.
No, handsome is not the word. We save a lot of money on handsome cream, because we don't need it.
We usually, and again, it's coming up soon, we're going to have to take the time off when Fashion Week happens in New York, because Todd and I are very much in demand during Fashion Week.
That's what you were getting your tuxedo for, weren't you?
Yes, that's exactly what I was getting the tuxedo for.
Because I had two guesses. It was for Fashion Week, or you were trying out for the part of James Bond in the next movie. You were gonna try and rip that away from him, but Daniel Craig.
No, just his stunt double. Like, I guess they're duct taping him to a chair again in this one,
mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be his stunt double for that.
Well, if there's anybody who could sit in a chair, it's you.
Oh, goodness. So we have one last book, and by we, I mean you. What is the last book that you read from last week that you would like to talk about, sir?
It's a miniseries from Image called Harvest, written by A.J. Lieberman and drawn by Colin Lorimer. I'm hoping I'm getting that right, because sometimes we have a little bit of trouble on last names with artists and writers. But this was the book I was looking forward to most when we talked about last week, and it's basically a book about these people who are harvesting organs. Don't really understand how or why, because they don't get into it. But they use disgraced doctors. And this is a guy who's been disgraced, and something happens to the old doctor, and they come looking for a new one. And the stuff that he does to get disgraced, you're like, yeah, there's no way you should be a doctor. And the art in this is beautiful. Somebody, and I can't take credit for it, basically summed it up the best way. It's this mix between J.H. Williams and Tony Harris, and that ain't a bad mix-up.
No, it is not.
And it's colored really cool. The only thing I have to say, though, this isn't for youngins. There's a lot of bad words in here, and some of the, you know, material that's going on, like just gore and blood and stuff like that. But, you know, like I said, we try to cover everything on here. And for, like, you know, if that's your thing, I would definitely try this book. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yeah. And, you know, I talked last week, and, you know, I might pick it up this week, because somehow, because of this five Wednesday month, my second week, which is usually like the week that I get crushed on,
mm-hmm.
It's like a normal week. Like, for once, and I can't remember how long, it's got to be at least 5 years, that the five-week month actually split my books up.
Wow.
Yes. Because, you know, usually we talk on the show, my haul on that second week of the month is usually anywhere from 13 to 16 books. And this week it's like a manageable number, and next week's a manageable number. And, you know, that fifth week is like all the annuals. It's like all stuff that we read anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was surprised to see when I was putting my list together that it's like, wow, how did this second week of the month get to be so small?
I'm the same way, because I was actually kind of shocked, because I don't have my list in front of me, but I know that it's 8 books this week for me, which mm-hmm. shocks the heck out of me. And I don't get into the lists as well as you do, so I haven't looked at next week's list. But I would imagine that I'm probably the same way too, because if they cut mine in half this week, that's going to be the same way next week. But I'm glad I have a couple of hardcovers that came in and stuff this week. So this was the week to have it. I got that Sunset hardcover from Gage that came in this week. So I'm going to get to read it. And I bought a Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow hardcover. So,
that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a pretty good Alan Moore story.
But what I was saying was, because it's such a light week, I might grab Harvest this week. But like I said, it's a mini series, so maybe I might just wait for the trade on that one. I'm not 100% sure. But definitely I'll be checking it out in your recommendation. I looked at the preview stuff from the link last week, and I really dug the art. And I've been doing my best to kind of stay away from, like, descriptions of series like that. I've just been kind of trying to pick up new series based on creative teams that I like.
See, that's what got me on this, because I said A.J. Lieberman, I really liked him from years ago. We were talking about Carl Kessel on Harley Quinn, and he came on late at the end of the run and did some stuff when, you know, like we call it that lame duck time on a book. It's like the book's in the middle, it's going down, and he was just like, I'm going to try some new things. Thought he was the next big thing, and he kind of disappeared. But on the thing where you don't want to look at the solicits and stuff like that, I'm kind of that way. I'm kind of not that way on books like this, because it's that kind of stuff that makes me want to try it. Like the whole Massive storyline or miniseries from Image, which is about, like, you know, environmentalists and the world goes to heck and they're like, oh, well, we're a ship who, you know, does environmental work. But what do you do once the world's gone to, you know, pot? What is an environmentalist doing? We're looking for our other sister ship who's missing. I'm like, okay, like, as I get older, superhero stuff, I enjoy, don't get me wrong, but I want to try new stuff. Now, granted, the Massive, I didn't care for after two issues and I stopped. This, I really loved. If you have a good, like, different premise, I'm going to at least give that book a try now, because I'm in that kind of a mode lately.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. So we mentioned here that it's a light week of books for us this week, which doesn't happen very much. What is the book that you are most looking forward to picking up this week, sir?
Ozymandias, the Before Watchmen. The first issue I read, and I thought this was, like, you know, one of the best out of them all. And Jay Lee's artwork and the way they're coloring it is just beautiful. And I think... might be tied for me for the best story so far, but it's definitely the best looking book out of all the, you know, Before Watchmen stuff.
Yeah, I was, you know, I'm still trying to play catch up on the books from the last, like, 2 weeks or so, and I still have the first issue of Ozymandias to read. I haven't gotten a chance to check it out, but if your recommendation on issue 2 is that good, I'll have to push issue 1 up to the top of the list of stuff that I'm still getting caught up on.
Everybody should listen to what I have to say.
I agree with that. Todd, you know, even though we disagree and he has horrible taste, he's right time to time.
From time to time? Okay.
Yes, from time to time. Hey, oh, and you know what? Hang on. I'm just gonna mention my book that I'm most looking forward to this week, and then I gotta poke you a little bit in regards to your boy. The book I'm most looking forward to this week is Batman number 12. It's the wrap-up of the Court of Owls stuff, the beginning of the new storyline leading us into the Joker stuff. So I'm sure there'll be a nice tease in there. But the real thing that's drawn me into this, that the art is by Becky Cloonan, who's not normally a superhero type artist.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've looked at the last, you know, obviously if you've been reading it for a while, and since the New 52, and you've been used to Greg Capullo's art, do not be scared off by this art. It is completely different. And I'm interested to see how the entirety of this book goes, because I really like her art, and I just like the way that the characters are drawn in these first couple pages that we've seen so far. And, you know, this is the beginning of that Joker storyline, allegedly. So if you, for some reason you haven't been reading Batman, you hate the Court of Owls stuff, which there's only one person I know that does, this will be a good Batman book for you to start reading.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Batman, too. I always like, you know, Scott Snyder stuff. I'm not in the same camp as you are on Becky Cloonan's art. I think she works for some stuff and doesn't work from the other. But I'll wait and see on Batman. But I don't know.
Gotcha. Well, maybe it'll lead to her doing other stuff. I think Capullo and Snyder are on Batman for the long run. I know Snyder has said as much on Twitter. So we shall see.
I hope so.
So before we get into the Twitter question, I do want to mention this just kind of to poke you a little bit. I had the same joke in my head, but I didn't say it. We at the house get Entertainment Weekly, but we get it like a week late.
Okay.
Because I don't subscribe anymore after they did an entire 88-page issue completely devoted to Sex and the City. I'm like, yeah, this isn't worth my money anymore. I'm done.
Oh, that was your favorite issue, you told me. Stop it.
It certainly was. So I stopped getting it, but my folks get it, so I just pick it up when they're done reading it. So I get it like a week late. And I don't know if you saw – well, I would guess that you probably did see last week's issue of Entertainment Weekly, especially because of the cover.
Yes, I did see it. I didn't read it or buy it or anything like that.
The byline – mentioned the cult of Doctor Who.
I'm glad you still say it the right way.
Of course. And I was going to come on here, and I thought to myself, I saw that, I'm like, oh, I need to make a joke to Todd and say, I didn't know you had to be in a cult to be a fan of Doctor Who. And I'm like, nah, that's like the corniest joke in the world. I'm not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
So just the other day, April comes to me, and it's just laying around the house, and she goes, oh, I didn't know Todd was in a cult.
Oh, man. Yeah, a cult. Okay. You know, one of the biggest shows, you know, in England of all time, running one of the longest running series of all time. Yeah, we're cultists. I've got my robe on and I chant when the show comes on. I know you're busting me, but I love the show. I'm looking forward to it coming back because BBC America is running like Doctor Who specials. Like they're mm-hmm. like this Saturday, you know, Doctor Who this or next Saturday, and that means like it's the countdown is on. Like we don't know exactly when because they had a commercial for it the other day, and it was like, oh, coming soon. And I was like, no, soon. Give me a date so I can open up my calendar and you know get my popcorn ready and sit down. But you know, if I'm part of a cult, I'm part of a cult. Whatever. It's a cool cult. You should join, but you don't have
right.
Any case,
and now I have to know who Amy Pond is.
What?
I said, now I have to know who Amy Pond is.
Amy Pond is one of the best companions of all time, and she ain't too bad to look at either.
Yeah, it's just like, for some reason, like about a week ago, she didn't exist in my life, and then within the last 7 days, like I can't escape people talking about her, her image, etc., etc.
Well, you live in a good world. That's what you're saying.
Yes, yes, yes. So I'm telling you, one of these days, once I convince, you know, April to watch Breaking Bad, which is going to be never, I might be able to convince her to watch Doctor Who. You know what your thing is? It's obviously, see, right now, if you want to get me on Doctor Who, your game is to be the long game. What you need to do is, when the baby gets to be about 3 or 4,
mm-hmm.
start tricking him to wanting to figure out what this Doctor Who is, and then we'll have no choice but to watch it.
All right, giving him Doctor Who toys and stuff. You know what? I got to start coming over your house more. I gotta, you know, hang out a little bit, and I might bring some cool stuff I have just to show you. And if I leave it there, by all means, you know? Nothing of choking. No choking hazards. I know what I'm doing, you know?
Well, aren't all the, you know, at least up to current, I would think, aren't all those on the Netflix streaming?
Yes, they are, except for one episode, which I always feel they do that so you can get like you have to get the disc thing. But there's one episode that's not on the Netflix streaming, which ticks me off.
Is it from the newest season or?
No, there was, it's hard to explain. Because the Whovians out there, they know. And I know it's like talking to a child here. For you, I mean. There was 4 seasons early on, and then the guy who was doing it was like, "Yeah, I want to go do Shakespeare on Broadway in England, whatever they call it over there." So he was doing it, and they're like, "Well, you're not. We have to do a season." He's like, "No, I think we're going to do just a couple episodes." So they had specials every couple of months. It would be like an hour long special. So he did 4 specials. One was a 2-parter, so that's technically 5 episodes. And one of them in there that's not technically not a season. One of the specials is missing. On streaming. So
I don't know. I think they do it to just to upset you specifically.
Well, and the millions and millions. I was going to do a whole rock thing, but I didn't. You know, of fans want to see that on streaming.
Nah, I don't think they do.
All right, I'll take your word for it. You're smarter than me.
They're okay with that giant hole in their Doctor Who online collection.
Then they have a sickness.
That's right. That's right. So enough of the Doctor Who talk, but I wanted to get that in for you because I know you'd enjoy it. You'd get a kick out of that. I would be. It's time to wrap things up here with our Twitter question from last week. Of course, you could always follow the show on Twitter at Weekly Longbox. You could follow Todd on Twitter. He is Roker the Joker. That's Rowker the Joker. And I am LF Chikarison, all spelled out. I'll do my best to have the show Twitter tweet us out. I just recently went over the 900 followers mark.
I know, I was going to send you another, look at me, I got over 900 followers. But I was like,
yes.
I'm not going to do it. You know what, I think you may have 900 followers, but I have like a little over 100. But we're closer. That's what it's about. You have the giant thing, but we're more of like a family on my Twitter account.
I do just let anyone in.
No, that is true. You have no, you know, selection process. Me, you have to fill out a form.
That's right. That's right. And again, I did follow a couple extra people back this week, and we'll see how that experiment works out. So far, I'm going to say, meh.
What? I'm not even going to get into it.
I specifically said, hey, guys, behave. And I made the wrong call to follow a whole bunch of people on a Monday night, most of them being wrestling fans.
Mm-hmm.
So my feed was just inundated with just silliness.
Ah, isn't that why you make those lists, though? You told me about these Twitter lists that I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll figure it out. I'm going to give everyone another couple days before I start moving people around.
Ah, sounds sensible.
But anyway, the question from last week was, what is your favorite costume in comics? And as Todd had mentioned at the beginning of the show, we got tons and tons and tons of choices. Many of them very good. Some of them I'm not really 100% sure how I feel about them. Will Kinchella, W. Kinchella on Twitter, said the Jack Knight Starman costume, which is a good costume, but it's not so much as a costume. It's just like an awesome, you know, he just fights in like a jeans and t-shirt, which is awesome.
And a great leather jacket that I would wear in public, so.
Yes. CM Towns on Twitter mentioned Punk Rock Storm. MC Han Scar mentioned the Mr. Fix-It Hulk look, which was interesting. I don't know if that would fly in today's day and age, but, you know, good choice, good choice. Mike Schaefer, another longtime listener, mentioned Ghost Rider. And, you know, again, outside of the Flaming Skull, you know, it's just a cool leather jacket, I think, and a motorcycle. Some of the more interesting ones was Bradley Tim, who's Dr. Flux on Twitter, mentioned Nexus is costume. And that is a cool, sleek, awesome costume.
That is a cool design.
Yes, yes, definitely. Our good buddy DJ, the Dooge on Twitter, I think just to upset you, mentioned Big Barda's full armor.
Yes, he did, and I'm not allowed to say anything until he moves into his new home.
Todd Ingram 3 on Twitter mentioned the original outfit that Havoc wore, which is a great outfit, and I guess it's coming back from some of the early designs that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
We got a couple Batman. Kevin Hellions on Twitter mentioned Batman, as did Vegas Margot, another longtime listener, specifically citing the Keaton Batman outfit, and it is very iconic. But as we've talked about on the show here, my favorite Batman costume is the Neil Adams blue and gray stuff from the 70s.
Mine too, on the Batman outfit.
Yes, we also had a couple people, Jason Kirk on Twitter and Lamar Revenger, both citing Wolverine, both the blue and yellow and the brown and yellow costumes. And Wolverine had a pretty cool costume.
Yes, he did. I always loved that. I guess I want to call it the... I liked more the Byrne Claremont one from the X-Men. Like, they changed up. That was sweet.
I also would be remiss to mention that two other people, Dr. Keith Taylor on Twitter. I didn't know there was more than one Dr. Keith out there, but alas, there is. And my good buddy Ryan, RPF5029, both mentioned Nightwing. And Ryan specifically, he even texted me personally to say, make sure that I say it's the disco collar Nightwing, because that's his all-time favorite.
That is a sweet look. I was thinking about adding collars to all my looks.
No, he'll actually be very upset that I said that. He really hates that.
Nah.
So this one was actually kind of difficult for me.
It was for me, too.
Yes.
Do you want to go first, or shall I?
I do. When I was thinking about this, I was thinking to myself, I don't want to pull something out that's just very easy. That's just, you know, it's like seems like a bit of a cop-out of an answer. And you might say that it is a bit of a cop-out of an answer. But when I was thinking of costumes, to me, the best costume is the costume that is immediately recognizable. That you don't need to be, you know, shown this person and told, okay, this is so on and so forth. You see that costume and you know exactly who that character is. Just by his costume. There's no question, like, you know what his deal is, you know his name, and then even if you didn't know his name, they tell you his name, and you're like, oh, that makes sense, that's what his costume should look like. My choice for best costume in all of comics is Spider-Man.
That's a great costume, the classic red and blues?
The classic red and blue. I know one of our listeners, excuse me, Ronan's Journey, Vance Gatlin, a longtime listener, mentioned the Scarlet Spider outfit, the Ben Reilly thing with the blue sweatshirt, and I'd have to disagree with that one. That one's a little ridiculous. But, like, every redesign that Spider-Man's had on his costume, and there's been tons, there is nothing better than that classic red and blue outfit.
That is a great costume. I mean, it stands the test of time. It's iconic. And to me, that's my look at it, is it's the most iconic costume. It's a costume that, you know, you look at it over the years, and if it's changed, they haven't changed it much, and it might be a little bit of a cop-out for me, too, because he's one of my favorite characters, but it's the Flash. I look at the Flash, and I can see the changes in the costume. Like, you know, the Barry costume had a thinner lightning bolt around the waist and the wrists, and Wally had, maybe his was a darker red with the thicker lightning bolts around the wrist and the waist, but it comes down at like a V kind of look. And that's the one for me, is the Wally one, but because he's just such a great character. But you look at it, and even into the new 52, that it's not changed that much. Yeah, everybody says it looks like armor, but I say it depends on who draws it. So that's from like 1956 to 2012, with a little bit here and a little bit there. The Flash costume is pretty much still the same look.
I'm very disappointed that no one said the classic Alan Scott Green Lantern costume.
That's my brother's favorite costume, and that's
really,
yes, that really is. Of like, he's not a huge comic fan. He's like, he doesn't even read them. He just likes to look through them sometimes when he's here at the house. But just that he always liked that, and to me, that's one of the tragedies of the new 52, is that,
yeah,
that the Alan Scott costume is gone. I love that cape and the purple with the red, and it's just really cool. But it's a time gone by that, you know, maybe we'll never come back to.
I hope we do. In the next reboot, I'm sure that costume will be front and center.
I don't know when the next reboot is. I hopefully not for a long time. I don't think my heart can take another reboot.
Well, I do thank everyone for following along on Twitter and listening to the show, of course, and contributing to the Twitter question of the week. This week's Twitter question is one that I had ready to go for last week. Todd Button hooked me with his costume one, which is a great one. Mine is going to be a tough one. This is a tough one for me.
Okay.
And this one does run the spectrum of things. What is your favorite one-on-one fight in all of comics?
Ah, okay.
Yes. There's been many a slugfest between one person and another. You know, you can't get away with just saying, like, oh, Avengers vs. X-Men, that's my favorite going on right now. There might have been one battle that was in there specifically that was your favorite. You know, might even be, and again, I don't want to, you know, this isn't my favorite, but, you know, your favorite might even be the time that Superman fought Muhammad Ali. That might be your favorite. Your favorite one-on-one comic book battle of all time. That is our Twitter question for next week.
And, I know this might shock you, I think I just came up with mine.
Oh,
But I'm much a faster thinker than you. That's what it is.
Yeah, this one I'm going to have to really scratch my noodle on and really dig deep for this one. I have a couple ideas, but I think I'll get it by next week's time.
We have a whole week.
That's right. So put your thinking caps on, everyone. Of course, when you're tweeting us, be sure to include the hashtag GrizzWLQ, and that'll help me find it easier when compiling the list. Also, don't forget to go to the iTunes and leave us a review. I saw a couple new reviews up there since our last show, and I'm sure next week we'll be reading some of the more favorable ones. And by more, I mean all of them. They're all favorable. I know some people have been slipping and have been giving us less than 9 stars. They've been giving us some 7 and 8 star reviews. What? Let us know what we can do to earn that 9 and 10 star review on the iTunes machine.
We'll work for it. We will. We won't just ask for it sometimes, but we will work for it.
That's right. That's right. So for Todd, this is Leonard. I do thank you all for listening to the Weekly Long Box, and we will catch you all here next week.